For the House Committee on Business and Labor for May 13, 2013. Okay, we've got a bunch of public hearings and work sessions. I think we will start out. Senator Thompson, I'm going to have you go second since these, if that's all right with you. Yes. So I'm going to open up, thank you, sir. So I'm going to open up a work session or a public hearing on Senate Bill 677.
No, 744.
I'm going to close it on 677. How about opening up a public hearing on Senate Bill 744? Jan, if you could summarize.
Madam Chair, committee members, this measure requires the Council on Civil Rights, who's appointed by the Commissioner Boley, to conduct a study on wage equality and factors contributing to wage inequality in Oregon. It requires that Council to report its findings to the Legislative Assembly by December of 2014. Declares an emergency effective on passage, no amendments. Came from the Senate on a vote of 29-0.
Okay, thank you. Welcome, Senator Edwards. Representative Kahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Chris Edwards. I'm the state senator in Eugene and Junction City. And we bring you Senate Bill 744. It came through the Senate with a lot of support, as you see. It's a fairly simple bill, and so I'll mostly speak to the reasons why I think we need this bill. For years, I mean, as long as I can remember, every year there's a report or a study that comes out that publishes the annual annual figures on disparity in income for the same work between men and women. And I've been hearing about this for as long as I can remember. And it doesn't seem like it's really the needle's really moving on that statistic. And I think it's one of those issues that sparks a little bit of dining room or living room conversation when the annual statistics come out and the media reports come out and read about it in the morning newspaper, and then everybody kind of goes about their way, and there's never really any serious efforts to look specifically at that issue. Now, there are a lot of issues around it, and I think that there have been a number of efforts in prior legislative sessions, as well as this one, to get at some of the contributing factors. But when we get down to the issue of wage inequality itself, it doesn't seem as though folks can agree on what the causes are. And if we can't get to a more intelligent analysis of what it is that contributes to wage inequality, at least in this state, for our legislative purposes, although our state is not unique in this area, then I don't think that we can come up with some really good solutions. So this bill simply asks the Bureau of Labor and Industries to look into that so that we can start coming up with some solutions. You know, some folks will say, well, you know, women don't make as much because they take mid-career breaks. And I mean, I don't know if that's it. I do know that many women have more familial responsibilities at home outside of the workplace, and that certainly, you know, cuts into one's ability in a professional sense to be able to, you know, go to events, network, build the relationships that really do ultimately lead to career advancement and higher incomes. So, you know, I don't know what's going on there, but, you know, sometimes it seems as though the price of motherhood and just simply being a good mom is a barrier to, or it becomes a barrier to entry into what many would call a good old boys club. So we're trying to understand what's going on in Oregon. Is it industry specific? You know, what are the differences between say labor line level jobs and managerial type positions to really get an understanding of the nature of the problem in Oregon so we can attack it, because it's long past due that we start doing something about the issue, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Kahn.
Good morning, Chair Doherty and committee. For the record, my name is Betty Comp, and I serve House District 22, Woodburn, Jervis, Brooks, and North Salem. I'm going to just share a couple of things that my good colleague and friend, Senator Edwards, has hit upon. I've had the pleasure of having an incredible career of ups and downs, and one of the times that I look at back fondly is a time when I was working with the crew of, there was 18 of us, and I was the only woman, and we were out planting a 40-acre hop field. And the good news is I think we all got paid the same amount, although my brothers that worked with me were all Latino, and sometimes because they knew I didn't have any money, they shared their lunch with me. And I worked in those kind of jobs for, about 10 years after I got divorced. And while I was, starting to go to college and get on my own with my four daughters. But the one piece that caught me was off guard was when you pick the hops, there's a day crew and a night crew. You'd work a 10, 12-hour shift, around the clock, 21 or 25 days until all the hops are picked. They're just like any other crop. They have maturity rate and all this stuff. But I was the hop dryer. And I found out that the gentleman that works at night, he did have more experience than I did, but he got paid a lot more than I did when I dried the hops during the day. And it's like, so I asked my boss about that, and he really didn't have much to say about it. He said, well, Betty, I made a decision. That's the way it is. And then when I got into education, particularly as a school board member, it was very, very interesting because this was in the 80s, and women were just at that time getting elected to school boards. When I, in connection with education in the good old boys system, I wanted to be a history and social studies teacher. And my advisor said, well, do you want a job? And I said, well, yes. And they said, well, are you going to coach? And I said, no, I have four children. And they said, well, then you better change your major because you won't get a job because that job is for men. And it's like, okay. I said, you're telling me that that's the reality. And that same thing happened as I became an administrator. I wanted to be a high school principal. At that time, there were very few women principals in high schools. And also, at that time, there was only one woman superintendent in the entire state. This was in the 90s, folks. This was in the 90s. The job equity situation for women is long. I mean, there's just lots of barriers. Women and minorities, we both fit in the same shoes. In Oregon, women still make 78 cents on the dollar less than a man. So 25% less than a man. I find that unreasonable. We do take times out in our lives to take care of our children. And I'm not going to talk about deadbeat dads because there sure as the heck are deadbeat moms. And that family integrity is something that you either have or you don't. But June 10th, this last week, was the 50th anniversary of the Equal Pay Act. It was signed in 1963. In 1963, I was just graduating from grade school. It's a long time ago. But very little progress has been made since that time. We can't really see where we need to go until we look at our statistics. And this is what this bill does. I applaud my good colleague, Senator Edwards, for saying, let's get Bola to give us some facts. Well, it's time to end the anecdotal stories, and it's time to deal with the facts. And so, colleagues, I would ask your support for this. And we are the state of Oregon. We do our own thing here, and we're proud of it. So make Oregon a state where everybody that has the same job has the same pay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Shamil, or Representative Fagan? Thank you for bringing this forward.
And hopefully quick questions, because we have quite a large agenda
so,
today.
So just curious with what level of detail you would expect this, because I will admit this issue has always eluded me. I've never been able to really wrap my head around it. I've always heard the statistics. I've never personally experienced being paid less for being a woman, and so I've never really been able to get my head around this issue, although I've heard, you know, the kind of the 78 cents on the dollar. So I think it would be incredibly helpful to see the statistics. So are you kind of leaving it to Boley to figure out how detailed their numbers would be? Because I think in particular the comparisons of women working in the same jobs as men, because obviously, you know, it's hard to argue that if someone's doing a job that requires less skill and less education, that they shouldn't be paid less than a job that's, you know, more skill and more education. But I think the comparisons that are the most helpful are same actual work, maybe called something different if men do it, personal assistant versus secretary or whatever. But do you kind of have a sense of what level of specificity with which they will report these results?
Madam Chair, Representative Fagan, we didn't get really prescriptive in the bill. I have spoken with Commissioner Avakian about the issue. He's very interested in the issue. They have begun work, and so we've talked about it. We haven't talked about how prescriptive, and we thought it best not to get really detailed in the bill. I think that our testimony here, what you've said, the discussion that we had on the Senate side will help inform what type of results we get back in terms of the amount of detail and recommendations.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Klomp, over the course of five sessions, you never fail to amaze me every time you relate one of your life stories. And you are a person with grit, and I hope someday you're going to write a book.
Oh, thank you. I'm a little busy. We have to finish the budget.
Thank
first.
You, just, Representative Fulvey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just real quick, I would hope that this study does get to the levels of looking at different industries individually and comparing that, rather than the global sense of statistics, because I think that will help us understand the differences between industries, one, and two, give us a more accurate reflection of where our problems are. Just a comment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions? Just one comment from the only woman that was in the social studies department when I taught high school. Thank you very much. I was it, and I didn't coach. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on...
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I bet you're between the ages of 22 and 30 and was one great looker.
Yeah.
For the record.
No comment. No comment.
Okay. I hate that when they bribe you.
Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 744. We're going to continue this later. And open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 677. Representative Senator Thompson. You can give a quick summary.
Madam Chair, committee members, this measure allows the employer until noon on the day after termination of employment to pay seasonal farm worker if it is the end of the harvest season and the employer is a farm worker camp operator and the farm worker is provided housing at no cost until wages are paid. There's no amendment before you.
Okay, thank you. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Barton, and Vice Chair Kinnemer, and the rest of the committee. Thanks for having me today. I'm Chuck Thompson, Senate District 26. This bill is a fairly simple bill. It passed 30-0 on the Senate side. It's just kind of a story. This last summer, we found out with a lawsuit, I believe it was Bear Creek down in Medford, which is the Orchards for Harry and David. They were found to have paid their employees the day after their final harvest, and they got into a mix-up. Some other suit was put on them by, I think it was California Legal Services. Anyway, they went back and also found out that they didn't pay their employees immediately. Well, there's been a statute in place that says that after final harvest, in the ag industry, you have to pay your employers immediately. No, as far as my knowledge is, that's not an industry standard. Myself, I fit in that category. We always paid the next day. Because usually if you get done picking or harvesting or whatever you're doing at 5 o'clock, usually that payroll takes about 4 or 5 hours to organize, because you go to each employee and check off what they harvested against your records, and so that you don't make mistakes. And it was just a standard that you did it the next day. But being as there was a lawsuit, then what I did this summer, because I do the most of the growers are like myself, where we don't have a payroll department. We are the payroll department, and if I'm not there, I've taught my daughter how to do the payroll. She was visiting her boyfriend in Tacoma, and we were going to be done picking on a Saturday morning, and I had to go on the China delegation trip on Saturday, so there was no way I could get my daughter to not be visiting her boyfriend and come down that day. She said, "No way, Dad, I'll be there Sunday afternoon." Well, I can't argue with that one. So in order for me to comply with the statute, we had to delay our last day of harvest, which would have taken 1 hour on Saturday. So the problem that this presents is not only is it cumbersome for the employer to do this, we are also delaying a day of harvest for the workforce, because normally we would have finished on Friday night at 6 or so o'clock, and then they would have left and gone up to the Upper Valley and been picking for the folks up in a different area, 15 minutes from there, and would have just continued to work. But being the statute's in place, we had to stop what we were doing. We didn't pick at all on Saturday, and we picked for an hour on Sunday. So our workforce lost almost 2 days of work so that I could comply with this statute so my daughter could come down. And I saw this being, everybody was aware of this due to the lawsuit, I saw this as a problem for the workers and for growers. And what this bill does, and then let me explain what I did. I came down, talked to the governor's office about it. He said, go talk to the nurseries. I talked to Brian Clem about it. He says, have you talked to Ramon about this? I go, no, maybe I should do that. So I got together with the nurseries. They put a meeting with legal services, Ramon, the CASA group, and they sat down and wrote the language for me, and it works well. It's mainly geared towards folks that provide housing at no cost. So, because I think the statute was in place because somebody back when in the 70s had a labor camp, they finished harvest and shut their labor camp and didn't pay their employees, and they didn't have a place to live for a couple of days while their employer did the payroll. So this doesn't do anything with the people that don't provide housing. They still have to pay immediately. It's the people that provide housing that they'll give us till noon the next day to make the payroll.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any questions of Senator Thompson? Okay, thank you. We're sticking around, or you have to go back to...
Hold on.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll continue with this hearing, and then we'll
we're not
up
too
the
busy
other
on that side.
Oh, really?
Well, not till later.
Okay,
everyone. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Ramon Ramirez. I'm president of the Oregon Farm Worker Union, and since 1985, we've been working to improve the living and working conditions of farm workers. We have supported this statute over the last 17 years. In fact, we were part of the working group that put it together back about 18, 19 years ago. And the reason why we supported this bill is because we were worried about labor contractors abusing farm workers immediately after the work terminates. A lot of times what happens is labor contractors would not pay their workers for a while. And so that was the genesis behind us promoting this law. And when Senator Thompson came to us and said that, you know, that this is a problem that exists with small family farmers throughout Oregon, and we felt like farmers like Senator Thompson and many others were farmers that were doing the right thing, that were paying their workers, that were paying their workers on time, and came to us and said, is there a way that we could fix this without getting penalized? And so we said, sure, would you be willing to accept that workers get paid the next day? And it was something that they agreed to. So that's why we come here in support of Senate Bill 677, because we think it's helps those farmers that are doing the right thing. It's a little change in the law. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't hurt us from going after unscrupulous labor contractors that fail to pay workers on time or that close their labor camps. We still have the tools to go after those people, but we didn't want the law to hurt good farmers. So that's why we've come here to urge a yes vote on Senate Bill 677.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, thank you. We have John McCauley and Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Remlo. And if you could keep your testimony brief, please. Oh, and Ian told me, I was going to say, she was on twice. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John McCauley. I'm here representing the tree fruit industry, which are the growers of whom Senator Thompson is a member. We do support Senate Bill 677 for all the reasons you've heard. We think it's a reasonable bill. It's pretty narrowly drawn, and we think it will be a great help to small orchardists that I represent and farmers all over the state who are in this particular situation.
Okay, thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Elizabeth Remley with the Oregon Association of Nurseries, just here again to support Senate Bill 677. We think that the way that Senator Thompson went about crafting this bill by bringing together stakeholders before the session started in order to make sure that everybody was on the same page about what kind of extension would be amenable to the farm workers so that farmers didn't have a burden, and we're not shifting the burden from farmers to farm workers, which is really sort of the important crux of the next day till noon language. Senator Thompson had originally wanted 48 hours. We got everyone in a room. We figured out what was going to work, and I think that that's what Senator Thompson did to write this bill is the way that legislation should be written, and we're really grateful for his work on this. So,
yeah. Thank you.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Ian Tolleson, Oregon Farm Bureau. I, too, will lend my voice in support of Senate Bill 677. It's a common sense bill. Senator Thompson did a great job of bringing all the stakeholders together, and you can see this as you have support from all groups involved. So appreciate your support. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of the panel? Okay, seeing none, thank you. And we also have a letter of support from Sybil Heeb and the Oregon Law Center in support of Senate Bill 677. Okay, no one else has signed up. Anybody else want to speak on 677? Okay, if not, I close the public hearing on Senate Bill 677. And I will reopen up the public hearing on Senate Bill 744. Andrea Peluso, Marcy Kelly, and Elizabeth Kushwa. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'm going to go first.
And if you have written testimony, if you could just summarize.
Yes, of course.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, my name is Andrea Peluso. I'm the Executive Director of Family Forward Oregon, and I'm presenting for you today both a fact sheet about pay inequity and my written testimony, so I'll summarize. This year, we celebrate the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Equal Pay Act. Still accounting for all other variables, education, training, job type, income level, geography, women in the United States still make 77 cents for every dollar that men earn. African American women earn just 64 cents on the dollar, and Latinas are paid 55 cents for every dollar that a white man earns. In Oregon, the picture is only slightly different. Women in this state are paid 78 cents for every dollar that are paid to men, meaning that full-time working women in the state of Oregon lose an average of about $10,000 per year for the wage gap. We were recently here for the celebration in April of the Equal Pay Day, which is the day in 2013 when women have made what men made in 2012. That was April 9th, and distributed this 78-cent bill. Unfortunately, women can't spend this bill. It would be great if we paid 78% of what men paid for housing and transportation and education, but we don't. So this is a real problem that I think deserves a real look at what the Oregon-specific solutions to this problem will be. 50 years from now, we don't want to be having the same conversation about unequal pay that we're having today. So we encourage you to take a look at Senate Bill 744, which would commission Boley to really look at what some Oregon-specific solutions to the equal pay problem might be. We can lead the country, I think, on this count, and we have the expertise to do so. So thank you so much for considering this legislation.
Okay, thank you. Chair Doherty and members of the committee, my name is Marsha Kelly. I'm the public policy advocate for the American Association of University Women, with about 2,000 members in Oregon. AUW has long been involved in the issue of pay equity, and we will be happy to provide full copies of two of our reports to the committee that will be established by Boley. One is called Graduating to the Pay Gap, and the other is called The Simple Truth About the Pay Gap, and it's updated annually with Bureau of Labor Statistics. To speak to Senator Edwards, not knowing about whether women taking time out of the workforce is part of it, the Graduating to a Pay Gap is a full-blown report done by AUW that factors in all of those things like age and taking time out, and compares straight on men versus women in different fields after college graduation, 1 year after graduation, and the pay gap exists at that point. Fortunately, it's only an 18% pay gap instead of a 23% pay gap, but it still is there. It also is in fields which we are encouraging in STEM. Again, we're very much interested in this issue, and we'll provide all of the help that we can to the Committee on Boley, because we have researchers back in D.C. who work on this every year in and out.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Chair Doherty, members of the committee, and for all the moms in the audience, happy belated Mother's Day to those who work inside the home, outside the home, and for the many of us who do both. We're very happy to hear of, did I announce myself, Elizabeth Cauchois for Boley? Sorry. We're very happy to cooperate with Senator Edwards on this bill. Many people do not know that the Oregon Council on Civil Rights is housed at under Boley's purview, and this is the commission that we would use to study this wage inequality. Two parts of the mission of OCCR are to study and monitor the causes, the effects, and the solutions of unlawful discrimination in Oregon, and to consider legislative agency proposals and actions to help address those causes. The members of the commission advise the commissioner on all matters relating to education about and enforcement of Oregon's civil rights, including the administrative and protective class provisions. In the last year, the council has already begun to study this wage inequality using national data and experience, and the initial findings have been provided to the commissioner. However, extensive and Oregon-specific recommendations won't be available, and this kind of information will encourage us to look for homegrown solutions. It's logical then for this report to be given to the legislature, and you can base your decisions then on facts and data from here in Oregon and help you inform your decisions in that context. So we're happy to do this and would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, thank you. Were you here when we had some questions about what the scope of this would be of the committee, and could you address those maybe?
Chair Doherty,
what sort of resources they have and so on.
Yes, actually, the council is made up of many, many. There's a huge, broad membership in the council, including the Oregon Advocacy Commissions, AARP, the Asian and Pacific Islanders. There's a huge group of people involved in this who are pulling together national data from both their own organizations and for doing research under Boley. What's helpful about the conversation that happened here today, which has been a little bit more extensive than that happened in the Senate, which was to help us be able to narrow it and drill down on what you're looking for. And so the timing of this is very good.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions for the panelists?
Representative Thatcher.
Was it, excuse me, was it discussed on the Senate side? Because you're saying there's a lot more discussion than we're having today, but are you looking at the whole, like a year's worth of pay? Are you looking hourly to hourly? What is it, as well as similar jobs? Because I know that there are sometimes women who want to have a flexible schedule and they'll work fewer hours. So over the course of a year, they will be getting less than somebody working full-time. So I'm just wondering if there's, what you're looking at, if you're looking at hourly pay or yearly or weekly, monthly, what?
Chair Doherty, Representative Thatcher, members, I don't have that level of detail for exactly what they're looking at. I cannot imagine they would be doing anything other than comparing apples to apples, and in cases like that, that would be very specific, and we would be looking into that specifically.
Okay. Other questions?
I would say when we're looking at this data that says 77 cents on the dollar, that data is based on population-level data. So we're not looking at individual cases of women asking for part-time schedules as compared to women working full-time, but more women across sectors, you know, looking at sector-to-sector comparisons. If you work in education versus public safety, for example, are women traditionally paid less, but also looking within sectors. So within public safety, are women being paid less than men? So it's really high-level population data more than it is specific cases, and they do usually control in that case for part-time work, for specific work circumstances, for education differences and things like that.
I wasn't looking for individual, I was just looking for apples to apples. Yes. That's what she was thinking.
Thank you, Representative Widener.
Thank you. The concern I would have with Bully looking into this as well, because listening to Representative Comp's testimony and everything, is she said they're both running a dryer, but the other guy had been doing it a lot longer. And even in the teaching system, a new teacher versus an old teacher, there's a huge discrepancy in pay. So I'm hoping that's something that'll be taken into account, to where they've been on the job the same time, they have the same responsibilities, because it could be an instance like in the mechanical world or running a piece of equipment where one person can work on the equipment, the other person only operates the equipment.
Chair Doherty, Representative Widener, absolutely agree, and part of that does go to their experience as well. This is not, we're not intending for two people who hold the same job who had 10 different years of experience to be making the same amount of money. That would be controlled through experience.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, our research on a national level with careers was done based 1 year after college degree with people working in the same industries, and it's done by silos and industries with the different variations. It's really important, apples to apples, and I believe that most of the study, all of the studies that are credible are good comparisons with those factors taken into account.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Just one comment. I think there needs also to be emphasis on the kinds of jobs, because I've always been in a job where whether you're male or female, you've made the same, mm-hmm. but you've not necessarily had the same opportunities. Mm-hmm. And so I've been one, I know it'll surprise you, it's kind of broken barriers every once in a while. But if you look also at the types of jobs mm-hmm. and the opportunities there in the committee, I would appreciate it.
Thank you. I just want to clarify, excuse me, Chair Doherty, for the committee, and what you're asking is because the study is on wage inequality, not on an opportunity gap.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that would fit into quality. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much. Any other comments? Okay, thank you. Those are the last we have signed up. Anybody else want to speak on Senate Bill 744? You see none. We close the public hearing on Senate Bill 744 and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 135. Elizabeth? Dan, if you give us a summary, please.
Well, Madam Chair, committee members, this measure abolishes the Wage and Hour Commission, transfers all the duties, functions, and powers of the Wage and Hour Commission to BOLI, declares an emergency effective on passage. There's no amendment. There's no revenue impact. There's no fiscal impact. Came over from the Senate on a vote of 29-0.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Kushwa.
Good morning again, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Kushwa with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Senate Bill 135 simply codifies what existing practice is now. I'll give you a little bit of a history on the Wage and Hour Commission. The Wage and Hour Commission was established in 1941 for the purpose of setting minimum wage and the conditions of employment for women and children. When Oregon passed its own minimum wage law in 1967, $1.25 an hour. Yeah. That was the maximum it could pay children while having the authority to pay less to children. The commission could also establish a lower rate of pay for those who are physically or mentally disabled, as well as for those who are over 65. In 1971, the commission was given the authority to set the minimum wage and conditioned employment for everyone, not just women and children. The winning of the commission's authority began in 1979 when the legislature revoked its authority to determine a lower rate of pay for children. In 1981, the legislature revoked its authority for setting a lower rate of pay for those who were over 65. In 85, the legislature made wholesale changes to the law, giving the power and authority of the commission to the Bureau of Labor and Industries, with the exception of child labor. This included making changes to the minimum wage, transferring the investigatory capability and rulemaking authority for wage and hour statutes, and minimum wage enforcement to and the ability to inspect employers' records. In 95, the state conformed those child labor laws with those of the federal USDOL, and that eliminated the ability to set a lower rate of wage. Easy for me to say. That took away the last remaining authority of the commission. The commission hasn't been staffed, nor has it had members since 2008, and this bill cleans up the statutes, transferring those authorities formally, and adds conforming language. It's a cleanup bill.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions of Ms. Kushwa? I remember when it went from 95 cents to a buck and a quarter, and that was a lot of money. Okay, thank you. Anyone else want to testify on Senate Bill 135? Okay, seeing none, I close a public hearing on Senate Bill 135 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 135.
Senator Barton? Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 135 to the floor, the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Barton moves Senate Bill 135 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Brandon, could you call the roll?
Aye.
Representative Matthews. Aye. Representative Pagan. Aye. Representative Thompson. Aye. Representative Holby. Aye. Representative Thatcher. Aye. Representative Whitt. Aye. Vice Chair Representative Kinnaman. Aye. Vice Chair Representative Barton. Aye. Chair Representative Doherty. Aye. Okay, the motion passes. Something for the consent agenda?
Okay. I'll carry it. I mean,
after we're just going to put on the consent agenda.
People in our caucus get a little upset when stuff just hits it. I can carry it really fast.
Well, actually, I was going to carry that bill. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Why don't you carry it? It's just a nice message that we're eliminating
that bill should
some
pass.
More work.
Okay. So, abolishing, saving
okay,
money.
Okay, so we'll go forward to pass recommendation, Doherty the carrier. Okay, with that, I close the work session on Senate Bill 135 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 677.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 677 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Barton moves Senate Bill 677 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none. Brandon, could you call the roll?
Representative Whit.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Holdy.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Whitman.
Aye.
Representative Hagan.
Aye.
Representative Matthew.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kenner.
Aye.
Chair Representative Gray.
Aye. Okay, with that, Senate Bill 477 passes. Representative Matthews, if you could carry that to the floor.
That'd be fine. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senate Bill 477?
Pardon?
677.
God dang. I've got to put my glasses on. Okay, with that, I close the work session on Senate Bill 677. And open up a work session on Senate Bill 744.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 744 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Barton moves Senate Bill 744 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, hearing none. Brandon, could you call the roll?
Representative Whitener.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kenimer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, Senate Bill 744 moves to the floor. And Representative Witt, could you carry that bill?
Be happy to, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay, moving on. Senate Bill 207, we can move the amendments. We've got a dash 6 amendment. I don't know if we have anyone to speak on that one. The dash 4 amendments were okay to the parties that were in concern, but I think what we'll do is we'll just open it up a work session to hear the amendments because we can't pass it on today. So I open up a work session on Senate Bill 207A. Jan, if you could remind us, and do you have both amendments down or just one?
I have two. So this measure requires limited partnership applicants for a construction contractor license to include as part of the application the name and the address of certain members of the limited partnership. And it requires the reporting of any changes in the names and addresses of certain limited partnership members. It deletes redundant reporting requirements and establishes residential locksmith services contractor license, and it establishes a home inspector services contractor license. You have the dash A4 amendment, which establishes a residential home services contractor license. And you have a proposed A6 amendment that modifies the definition of non-exempt class of independent contractors for CCB licensing purposes and defines what a worker leasing company is. There is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact on the A4 amendment, and there's no revenue impact on the A6, but the committee is waiting for the fiscal impact on the A6.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Barton.
Yes, certainly, Madam Chair. I recall the A4 or the 4 amendments pretty well. Mm-hmm. Are we going to, before we move the dash 6 amendments, I don't recall those. Did those come up last time or are those new?
I think they did. We have somebody.
Great.
Madam Chair, and before he comes up, the A6 amendment was something I raised issues about. You know, after talking to the CCB about this and thinking about it and looking at the language before we were coming forward, I recalled that there are some specific issues around leasing agents and worker comp law currently that I was not sure that the bill adequately addressed. And so I appreciate speaking on the A6 amendment that the CCB did get a hold of the workers' comp division and made some changes that I think are acceptable.
Okay, thank you very much for that clarification.
Chair Doherty and members of the committee, Vice Chair Barton, the A6 is an improvement to the A5. We brought the A5s to you a while back. What it does is it fixes a problem that some of our contractors have that choose to lease their workers. You recall that leasing workers is akin to hiring somebody else to take care of your human resources. So it's different than temporary workers. This is where you actually farm out all of your hiring and management authority, in essence, as I understand it. We had a conflict in the law a little bit. It treated people who handle their employees in the regular traditional manner different than folks that lease workers, in the sense that on the commercial side, it required the latter business to get that a little bit more costly personal election coverage. And it seemed like that was not necessary. It didn't seem like that was the intent of the legislature when they put that requirement in, and also made it a little bit cleaner from the standpoint of enforcement. So what the dash 6 do is an improvement on the A5 after talking a little bit with workers' comp. I believe that they don't have any additional input on the matter at this point, but are here to answer questions if you have them. Can I answer any further questions?
Okay.
That's it for me.
Okay. Good. Okay, any other questions of Craig while he's up here? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we did also, we just got a fiscal on 207, so we can move the bill today if we'd like. So.
Madam Chair, committee members, that fiscal impact is a minimal fiscal impact on the A6.
Thank you very much. Okay, any other discussion or questions about the dash 4 or the dash 6 amendments?
Well, yeah, what was the dash Remind me. You kind of went through fast in the dash four.
The dash four amendments, in fact, Mr. Miller came by the office this morning and said that they were okay with them, and that was the one that defines the home leasing, or not the home leasing, the home...
Home services contractor.
Like
the home warranty contractor. Right. So it establishes a limited license for home services contractors.
Inspectors, wasn't it?
Pardon?
Wasn't it the inspectors?
The inspectors are already in the original bill. Okay. So the original bill has a limited license for home inspectors and a limited license for locksmiths. The A4 adds a limited license for the home services contractor.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions? If that could move the...
Okay, I'm going to move the dash 4, then dash 6,
yes,
in case anyone... Yes. Madam Chair, I move the dash A4 amendments to House Bill 207.
Senate
Bill 207.
Okay, thank you. Representative Barton moves the dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 207A. Is there any further discussion? Representative Thatcher?
I don't like it. I think they should be an agent or somebody. I don't see them as construction contractors that need to be registered with the Construction Contractors Board. So,
okay. Any other discussion? We did call the roll on all the amendments. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was fairly skeptical of the A4 amendments in our previous session, but I'm going to support it as it goes forward. I, on the other hand, thought that the home services contractor licenses should be tested on their knowledge of contracting law in Oregon, because they are essentially hiring contractors and providing contracts with homeowners, but not specifically about performing the work. They are utilizing licensed contractors and are to actually perform the work. So I'm gonna support it today, and I'll be watching that industry going forward. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. Is there any objection to the amendment? Okay. Noted, Representative Thatcher. Okay, if not, the dash 4 amendments are going forward. Representative Barton.
Madam Chair, I also move the dash A6 amendments to Senate Bill 207A.
Okay, Representative Barton moves the A6 amendments also be added to Senate Bill 207A. Any discussion? Okay, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the dash 6 amendments are included.
To the floor?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 207A to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Barton moves Senate Bill 207A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes. Representative Thatcher?
I honestly haven't made up my mind on this one, but I think I'm going to be just voting no today until I make up my mind.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. Brandon, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Holvey.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
No.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kinnemer.
Aye.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, Senate Bill 207A, is passed. Anyone want to carry this to the floor? Okay. Thank you, Representative Kinnemer. Okay, with that, I close a work session on Senate Bill 207, open up a work session on Senate Bill 264.
Madam Chair, committee members, this measure includes qualified employees of OUS in the definition of managerial employee for collective bargaining purposes. There is no revenue impact on the bill, no fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you. Is there any discussion on this bill? It is not moving with the dash 1 amendments, just the original bill. Okay, any discussion? See no discussion. Brandon, could you call the roll?
Yes, I need to make a motion.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
No problem.
Jump on.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 264
to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Representative Barton moves Senate Bill 264 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Now, is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, I'll be a no on this today, just to give you a heads up. I wasn't convinced that there's a real need for this. So.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion? Okay, Brandon, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Wagner.
No.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Sign off.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kenner.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, the motion passes. Senate Bill 264 is going to the House floor. Anyone want to carry this bill? Seeing no great surge, I will carry the bill to the floor. Okay, thank you. With that, I close a work session on Senate Bill 264. Open up a work session on Senate Joint Memorial 5. And if you could summarize again.
Madam Chair, committee members, the measure urges U.S. Secretary of Commerce and U.S. Trade Representative to investigate the extent of subsidies China provides to Chinese pulp and paper manufacturers, the degree to which these subsidies violate World Trade Organization agreements and other trade agreements, and the effects of the subsidies on the U.S. pulp and paper industry. There's no amendment, there's no revenue impact, there's no fiscal impact.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move SJM 5 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Barton moves SJM 5 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion? You see none. Brandon, could you call the roll?
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Wagner.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, motion passes. Representative Witt and Representative Kenner were on the bill. Would you like to carry it?
Will
carry it. Thank you very much. Both of you, please. Thank you very much. Or
co-carry it.
Representative, we will co-carry the bill.
Can we try carry it?
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So.
Gentlemen, I'm actually planning to sign on to the bill unless you object.
Not at all.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, seeing that, close work session on SJM 5, and that is our duty for the day. Anything else? Okay, see you on Wednesday. Thank you very much.